Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So this verse is, which one is it? 36. Punas cha vipra sapena rakshaso tau babuvatu kumbhakarna dasha krivau hatau tau rama vikramai. Punascha viprashapena,
punascha viprashapena,
rakshasalta bhavu vatu,
rakshasalta bhavu vatu,
kumbhakarna dasha grivau,
kumbhakarna dasha grivau,
atauta rama vikramai,
atauta rama vikramai,
punaha,
punaha,
again.
Cha,
also,
viprasabena,
being cursed by the Brahmins,
rakshasau,
the two rakshasas,
tau,
both of them,
babuvatu,
incarnated as,
kumbhakarna dasa grivau,
known as Kumbhakarna and the ten-headed Ravana, in their next birth. Hatau, they also were killed. Tau, both of them, Ramavikramai, by the extraordinary strength of Lord Ramachandra. Translation. Being cursed, let's see, I'll read the verse before that, so there's some continuity. This is 35, thus the two associates of Lord Vishnu, who had become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, the sons of Diti, were both killed. By illusion, they had thought that the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, was their enemy. 36. Being cursed by the Brahmins, the same two associates took birth again as Kumbhakarna and the ten-headed Ravana. These two Rakshasas were killed by Lord Ramachandra's extraordinary power. Text 37. Pierced by the arrows of Lord Ramachandra, both Kumbhakarna and Ravana lay on the ground and left their bodies, fully absorbed in thought of the Lord, just as they had in their previous births as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. 38. They both took birth again in human society as Shishupal and Dantavakra, and continued in the same enmity toward the Lord. It is they who merge into the body of the Lord in your presence. Your presence. Okay, King Yu is there. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vairanu Bandena. Means by the bondage of considering the Lord an enemy. Prabhupada starts out the prayer book. Varuna Bandena. Acting like the Lord's enemy is also beneficial for the living entity. Kamad Veshad Bayat Snehat. Whether in lusty desire, anger, fear, or envy of the Lord, somehow or other, it's recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami, Tasmat Kanapya Upadina. One should become attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ultimately achieve the goal of returning home back to Godhead. What then is to be said of one who is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover? Of course, the path of becoming attached to the Lord out of lusty desires or envy is a little more difficult than the path of bhakti. It takes a little bit longer also. But Krishna is so attractive that that's why so many people envy Krishna, because he's all attractive, and we want to be all attractive. So he's actually the ultimate object of envy. All the envy stems from envy of the Lord. How many of you were envious of, or were inimical towards Krishna consciousness the first time you were exposed to it? Dharashaya. Who else? Yes, also. Any of the ladies? What happened?
Philosophy was not me. The philosophy was not me.
That you thought the philosophy was shallow. That we just were sentimentalists chanting. You first saw the devotees chanting. Is that it?
No, I read the book.
Read the book. And you thought the philosophy was not deep. Mundane scholar? Were you a mundane scholar? which book did you read?
I read the book of Vedas. Mm-hmm. And I had read other books of Vedas.
And you considered that it wasn't Krishna covered you over. What wasn't deep about it? What did you feel that was missing?
Rupati is translated Karma Yoga is not being in Chakra, Karma Yoga is not being, Jnana Yoga is not being. There is putting Mati everywhere, so that he probably misinterpreting it's just going his own way.
So instead of really penetrating to the philosophy, Prabhupada was using the Bhagavad Gita to present his own point of view. Of course it all leads to bhakti. And the perfection of all these different yogas is bhakti. Prabhupada wanted us to really understand that. Interesting. So what made you change?
I met some devotees who said, why don't you just chant? And they followed what they said. And I kept continuing to chant. And years later, I met Durga Prabhu, who actually told me the real inner meaning when he said, all the different kinds of yoga, see where the uttama, that's what Krishna said, and that's the truth, that's not true. It's there that it comes from me.
Interesting. So you weren't really envious, you were just misinformed. Innocent misinformed. Like that. Yeah, there is a differentiation between an envious person and an innocent person. We should avoid the envious people. But the innocent people who are, have a poor fund of knowledge, they can be approached and convinced. I don't think you fall into the category of being inimical due to your own lack of desire to recognize Krishna. What happened with you, Dharashaya Prabhu?
I guess I felt so disappointed before. I used to see the devotees chanting and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, and then I went
Where?
Harvard Square.
Oh, Harvard Square.
In the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be there when I came to get the subway in the morning, and they were still there when I came back. They were there in all kinds of weather, and they were there in the winter with their red legs sticking out from under their dhotis and crazy varieties of different overcoats. And one high top black sneaker and one low top white sneaker.
That's the fashion these days, you know. Where are the trendsetters?
They were just jumping and dancing, and I just walked on the other side of the street. And I had a similar experience with these pizza. Everything Prabhupada interpreted as Krishna consciousness. And I just thought he's
fanatic.
Yeah.
What made you change?
A friend of mine took me over to, there was one of the ride out our bus in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was working, and a friend, they had a Sunday feast, and a friend dragged me over there, and she got offended and drove away. She had been reading a Krishna book on the way over that she found in my house. Because I'd met the devotees in Pittsburgh the Christmas before on the marathon, and I went through the Pittsburgh airport 3 times and got books 3 times from Mother Prasadma. And so I came back with 12 books and Sarah saw me in the Memphis airport and tried to sell me some books, and I said, I already have 12 books. So anyway, this girl had picked up a Krishna book and she was reading it on the way over to the Sunday feast, and she opened the book, and the first thing she saw was Chandra Pandit says that women are less intelligent. So we got in and we listened to the lecture, and she asked the first question. She said, says here in this book that women are less intelligent. What's up with that? And so she got a standard kind of Radha Damodar type answer. And she was so furious that she got up and left and jumped in her car and left with screeching tires. And there I was, I was left there. And all the drum shorts were all laughing at me. Let's spend the night, and the next morning I got up, and anyway, it's a long story, but Ramadas kind of made sure that I kept coming back, and he gave me different services, and he went to my apartment and took all my stuff and sold it. And so you're not cash, are you? Anyway, you kind of forced me to be devoted against my will, and here I am.
It's interesting how to explain that agyata sukriti leads to gyata sukriti. That in a previous life or previous situation in this life, we unknowingly engage in devotional service. Just like even an envious person, there are devotees who used to make fun of the devotees, or used to criticize the devotees, used to harm the devotees, at least verbally. thinking of the devotees and chanting Hare Krishna in the process. It's unknowing Agyata Sukriti, unknowing devotional service, because you're chanting the name of the Lord. Of course, there's so much offense there, but because of that connection, then, and combined with the mercy of it's explained that there are a few ways that one can be given the seed of bhakti. One is through the Shastra, the other is through Paramatma, but normally it's through the mercy of the pure devotee. So Prabhupada's movement, which is the representative of Srila Prabhupada, to Prabhupada comes through to everyone, is so powerful. And let's speak, when Prabhupada was on the planet, that mercy shines through so strongly that, and if a person's, by his previous Agyata Sukriti, if a person is a little bit receptive because of that purification, then the person accepts the seed of bhakti within the heart, then it starts growing. Even people who are inimical, that's the mercy of Lord Nityananda, right? And that's why he's considered more merciful than Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Nityananda gave Krishna consciousness to even those who didn't want it, even those who tried to harm them. His desire, his compassion was so powerful that he was able to do that. So even though some of us, we really didn't want Krishna consciousness, and some were even inimical, like you're saying, somehow or other, Krishna made the arrangement. And then, you know, the devotees were so enthusiastic, even though you found yourself in a situation that you really didn't want to be in, somehow or other, they affected your heart to the point where actually you wanted Krishna consciousness. Remarkable. Prabhupada's mercy. So, and this is what's being explained here, that just the mercy of the Lord, he liberates those who are so much antagonistic towards him. What to speak of those who are favorably inclined, how he feels towards those devotees. We can't really imagine the affection that Krishna has for us. Not just when we become devotees, but before that as well. I was thinking when I was down in Argentina, how sometimes some devotees go away or they become inimical, or for those who have helped bring such devotees to Krishna consciousness and tried to take care of them, it happens sometimes when they just sort of change or turn away. And if you have a type of paternal affection for them, or paternal relationship, then you feel sad, especially if the communication is not there due to their desire. There's nothing you can do. Has anyone ever been in a situation like that? Someone just sort of rejects your association. There's really nothing you can do about it. So I was thinking, well, parents must be in a situation like that very often when their children grow up, when they're young, everything, daddy, mommy, they always want to hold your hand, and you feel a certain amount of joy in that. And then they get older, they just start rejecting you, they look at you like some kind of square type of person, and really doesn't know where it's at. And and teenagers are typically like that. They just don't want to talk to their parents anymore. They have their own life. They don't even want to go home. They can go home because they have to, and then they move out as soon as they can. And parents are saying, why don't they ever call me at least once a week or something like that? Or there's an argument, and then they kids take off that parents don't even know where they are. So I was thinking, bring that, taking it another step, how parents must feel when their children reject them. They have so much love and affection they want to give, and they can't. And then I was thinking how Krishna must feel, because there are an unlimited number of living entities in this material world who just don't want to have anything to do with him, who once had a relationship, a very intimate relationship of love and affection, and somehow or other, complete rejection. Not just rejection, but animosity, to the point of denying Krishna's existence. So I was thinking how, according to the degree of love and affection one has, that's how much pain one feels when that can't be expressed, can't be lived anymore. So we can't really imagine how much love and compassion Krishna is feeling for the wayward souls. For us, it's just, well, whatever. I'll chant Krishna's name, try to chant 16 rounds and do some service, try to think about him every once in a while. And there's Krishna offering everything. And Prabhupada talks about that when the sun goes away and then suffers like anything, finally the sun comes back home, how happy the parents must feel. And you've seen that picture of Krishna embracing the cowherd boy when he finally goes back to Godhead. You've seen that picture? It's a wonderful picture. Finally, after zillions of years, his devotee returns and there's a loving embrace. So it's very, very, very sweet to think like that. So how much more affection Krishna has for his devotees. And so we should never think that Krishna doesn't care about us, that Krishna has neglected us, that Krishna somehow or other is causing us some type of harm without cause. As Prabhupada explains, a devotee thinks that actually I deserve much worse due to all my sinful activities. Krishna's being so merciful to me. A devotee doesn't think that just because he's trying to be humble. We should think like that because that's actually what's happening. It's actually the truth. It's not just a way of expressing oneself in order to have a more positive outlook on the situation, but it's actually the truth. That's why we should think like that. Actually, I deserve so much worse, but Krishna's being merciful to me. It might be hard to think like that because sometimes we have a overestimated or inflated opinion of ourselves. But it's actually true. If we really understood the nature of our previous offenses, etc., then we'd actually see that Krishna really is being merciful to us. What to speak of if we think of everything Krishna has given us and allowed us to maintain. That really helps us have a wonderful disposition, outlook on our situation. Instead of thinking what Krishna isn't giving us, what Krishna and his devotees are giving us. In that connection, I came across, one devotee told me about this new phenomena in the world. It's one of the latest crazes, but it's a really good one. Really good one. And I'm thinking very seriously about trying to institute it in our yatra in Argentina. It's you can look it up on the internet also. I'll tell you the story behind it. You probably heard of it, or some of you. There was this pastor in a church, I'm not sure where it was, but he read some passage in the Bible that said if you don't complain, then you receive the mercy of the Lord. There's some passage in the Bible like that. And he began to think very seriously about that. And along in conjunction with thinking about the situation of his church and the congregation. And so he decided to try something. He put a rubber band or something on his left wrist. And the devotees here know about it? Or, yeah. You've heard about it? No wonder you're so different. Okay. So, and he tried not to complain or criticize or gossip. His goal was to do that for 21 days. How many of you have heard about this? Okay. So, took him, and if he complained or gossiped or criticized, then he had to move the bracelet over to his other wrist. His goal was to keep it on the same wrist for 21 days, 3 weeks. It took him 3.5 months to do it. And then he inspired his congregation to take up the same challenge. So he gave them all bracelets. And they started doing that. And of course, in the process of doing that, you learn how to express yourself without complaining. And your whole thought pattern changes. No criticism, no gossip, no complaining. Expressing yourself in a positive way, communicating in a positive way, rather than a negative way. And his congregation became very inspired. And the news spread. And it got very, very popular. And it's getting more and more popular. And these bracelets that they have made and that they're distributing all over the world. They have a website now. It's called Complaint Free World. And they've distributed over 5.5 million, almost 5.5 million of these bracelets to institutions, schools, everywhere. It's an amazing thing. People write in their comments, how it's changed their life. You know, and everybody's wearing these bracelets, these purple bracelets. And it's really, it sounds to me like a fantastic thing, because then you're, just like with this nonviolent communication, I think maybe we talked about it. A lot of devotees are becoming involved in this too, just a way to express yourself and communicate that inspires people rather than discourages them. Inspires them in their relationship with you and inspires them in general. Nonviolent communication is, we haven't learned how to communicate by and large. It's something that, it's a basic human function, necessary human function, and especially in Kali Yuga, Maya acts in such a way that communication breaks down. Everybody's always getting hurt by each other or offended, etc., etc. Misunderstandings, relationships breaking off just because of our inability to communicate properly. So, it's nonviolent communication in this complaint-free world phenomena. So people really want to learn how to relate to one another, and surely the devotees do as well. And I haven't read the book yet. I found out about it when I was in Argentina, so I'm going to get the book and read it. But I was just thinking about, well, instead of saying this darn light doesn't work, how am I supposed to read the book if the light doesn't work? What could I say? Well, what can we do to fix this light? It's just a simple way to change that around. And then I just saw on the website this morning, because I hadn't checked it out in a long time, there's a like complaint-free marriage, you know, the 21-day complaint-free marriage program, and this person, you volunteer for that. What? Yeah, inspire people, give them a bracelet. seems like you need a bracelet. I think his name is Richard Bowen. He was on the Oprah show, and you know, he's like becoming really famous now. It's a really good thing, and you can Krishnize it. Of course, you can apply it. For us to say that, well, those are the karmis, they're doing this thing. We don't need that. What do we have? We have problems also. And in terms of what we're talking about, how sometimes I've heard this a lot, devotees go through different challenges in their lives and they become mad at Krishna. They become mad at Krishna, start complaining about the way Krishna is dealing with them. It's so easy to complain because this material energy, and we're all conditioned souls, it's so easy to find fault. So easy. It doesn't take much formal education. Anyone can do it. To do something about it, and to see things in a positive way and actually create a positive change, that's the challenge. So these kind of things help a lot. This kind of disposition, and it's Krishna consciousness. And there's so many quotes from Prabhupada that explain how a devotee should actually be seeing things and not criticize, and not finding fault, not gossiping, no prajalpa, and etc. So it all fits right in. And this helps us create a really nice, positive attitude about our devotional service. If we allow the other things to enter in, then everything becomes negative. We get discouraged, and people around us become discouraged. And we're not going towards Krishna. Our relationship with Krishna is not developing. And if one thing Krishna can complain about is us, and it's so nicely pointed out that Krishna doesn't see those parts. He sees the good parts. That's what he sees. And of course, he has to deal with the offenses. But in terms of his feelings of love for his devotees, he always sees that side. The danger is when we start complaining, we just see the negative side. We don't see the positive side. And then we lose our taste for everything positive, for Krishna consciousness, for the devotees, for our service. It's a way of Maya to just completely engulf us and discourage us and have us look elsewhere for the good things. Go back into that illusion again. Appreciating association with that which cannot help us in our Krishna consciousness. So these are some points that inspired me when reading this particular verse in purport. Does anyone have any comments or questions about anything we talked about?
I went to Mississippi farm near the state of Vermont, and the Krishna Maharaj was visiting, and he did this non-violent communication program, and we all got together and did it for a week, and it was really, really nice. And after that, I stayed, that took the beginning part of my stay there, and a lot of devotees, and I've traveled there quite a few times, a lot of devotees that were a little strong, a little hard, became softer, and every time they would speak about the non-violent communication, and that really helped them a lot, and it helped me a lot too, because there's a lot of things that I wanted to know about certain things, and like raising teenagers, how do you raise teenagers, how do you speak and how do you encourage them. So I asked Maharaj, how do you deal with the situation, how do you use the proper words to encourage such situation, and that really helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. This non-violent communication program. Mm-hmm.
Right, we have so much to learn actually about relating with one another. Because we become conditioned by our past lives, by our parents, the way they communicate, our friends, the society in general, what you read, the movies, you see everything. And it's pretty much wrong. It's pretty much wrong. And whatever we've been able to do right has been good. But there are always ways to refine that more and more, perfect it, and it's really a phenomenon how you can say, get the same point across in a way that a person appreciates it, as opposed to trying to get your point across in a more careless way, and the person becomes discouraged. I remember reading this book years ago called The 1 Minute Manager. I think it had to do with, instead of catching people doing things wrong, one of the main points was catching people doing things right. And reinforcing that, encouraging that. Just little things. We can talk about this type of thing for hours. It's just a new way to see things. It's a Krishna conscious way to see things. It's old wine in a new bottle. It's packaged in a certain way that we can concentrate on it. And that makes all the sense in the world. It's Krishna consciousness. There's no doubt about it. Yes, Prabhu.
You're speaking about positive reinforcement, how we should try to see the good and try to see less and less the bad. And I was thinking about how when we preach to people, we learn from the experiences we get when we speak to different people. You know, we learn about ourselves and we learn about how to deal more and more with other people the more we talk to more people. And we begin to learn how to, you know, they're also human beings and they're also having experiences and they're... immediately when you start trying to see the good in other people, you're trying to fan the spark, as they say, right? Fan the spark. One time I was talking to some young men and I was... we're having this... debate on the scientists. Where I was trying to smash the scientists and their point of view, and it was going nowhere. They were not listening to me, they were challenging attitude, they weren't listening. And then I started apologizing to them, I'm sorry, and in fact, trying to look the good in what they saw, I started saying that, okay, well, they're intelligent persons, at least they're somewhat aware of things. And when they left, some just randomly, some person I've never seen before just goes up to me and they just tell me, we should share. I don't know, just someone just told me we should share and not challenge. So then I realized that, I should see the good in other people and share with them what I know and try to see the good in them. You know, try to see what good, where they're at, what good it is that they're doing. Try to encourage them to continue in whatever good thing it is that they're doing.
That's a very good point. A lot of people criticize the self-righteous attitude of various members of various religions, and we shouldn't fall into that. And our communication is very important because that comes out. Like in Argentina, we have a lot of little mini festival, and we take it to different places on Saturdays and Sundays especially. So we went to this one plaza where all the they call them the darkies. Do you have darkies here? They wear black and. They're goths and then there are others. There's the darkies. Goths wear black holes. Anyway, there was hundreds of them. And this Mataji had been doing a Harinam program there a little. So we wanted to join her. And we set up our whole thing, and because we wanted to attract them to coming over and looking at the bugs, etc. And nobody was coming over. You know, they had all their groups. They knew we were there. We went around past that little prasadam, but nobody was coming over. And then on the way home, I was thinking, here we were waiting for them to come over to us, because, you know, we have the message, and we want them to be interested in what we're presenting. And I was thinking, what we should have done, we should have had some devotees go over to them and ask them about them. We were waiting for them to come over and ask, for them to ask us about us. And they, what were they thinking there? And they were probably thinking that, because that's what we were doing. But I was thinking the real thing would have been if we would have gone over there, some devotees, and started really wanting to find out about them, what they think. And why, not in a challenging way, but just to try to get to know them. I think that underlines your point, that we really have to be willing to start on some kind of common ground and not give people the impression that we know everything and they don't know anything and we're here. We're just like, that's why I don't like hearing that phrase, you should preach to that person on Sunday feast. So, Prabhu, can you preach to that person over there? So what does that mean? Sit down with the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. You make an announcement or you tell people you meet on the street, hey, we have a preaching program next Saturday night. We have a preaching center. What does that conjure up in people's minds? That you go there and you sit down and people preach to you. You don't get a chance to express yourself. It's not a real... there's no dynamic of interaction. So, and these words came about because of our attitudes. And if we change our attitudes a little bit, I think our vocabulary will change as well. and I think it's very important for us to be able to go out into the society. Bhaktivedanta Swami was expert doing that. He's like a chameleon. He would be able to change his presentation, his personality, all according to his audience, and start on, I saw him do this on a number of occasions, start on a very, very common ground, everybody, right. And then he'd take people a little further once he established their faith and their trust and relationship. And that's what we have to do. Nobody likes to start off a relationship with somebody or have an encounter with someone where that person has you think you don't know anything and they know everything. So, that has to do with nonviolent communication in the general sense. Violence means to not give someone Krishna consciousness when you can. I remember I was preaching up at the University of in San Diego, and started having this conversation with a college student, and he started agitating me. I said, "Look, you know, if you want to come back a pig in your next life, you know, it's your choice." So, of course, he got so upset at me and walked away. You know, then I realized, oh my God, what did I do? So that was violence. I could have given that person Krishna consciousness to one degree or another, and he left with less desire than he had to begin with to become Krishna conscious. Anything else? Jai. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.